Grace and peace, and a welcome to Dare to Dream with Dr. Nicole. I know it doesn't sound like financial solutions with yours truly, but we are being revamped and revitalized, and you're going to get some of the same amazing information. But I've always had a dream, and if anyone knows me, I have been the Dare to Dream girl. And with given permission, we are able to talk to individuals who have a desire, a goal, an objective to dream big dreams. And sometimes what hinders us is our inability to figure out how to manage that financially. And so we're taking the show a little broader this go around, and I'm so excited about it. So this is our first restart of Dare to Dream with Dr. Nicole. And today, who else better to kick it off with than a very dear friend of mine who has stood the test of time and understood what dreaming big dreams are like for me. I want to introduce to all of you none other than Rev. Herb Thomas, who has been a co-host to me when I was hosting The Power of Gospel. And oftentimes on a Sunday night, we would talk about dreaming big dreams and how do we manage those things financially, which is what led me to wanting to have this conversation today, because we have always been somewhat transparent about our journey and our lives overall. And so for the record, for the audience, Reverend Herb, please introduce yourself to the Dare to Dream audience.
Okay, well, thank you for having me, Reverend Dr. Nicole B. Simpson. I'm honored to be here, truly. I'm Reverend Herb Thomas, and I'm a minister of staff at St. John's Baptist Church in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. And I've been blessed for a while to be a part with Reverend Dr. Nicole on a radio program. And I miss it, but it was a beautiful experience, and it helped me a lot. And currently, I'm entering my final leg of my doctoral program at United Theological Seminary in Dayton, Ohio. So pray tell, I'll be entering my final year come August.
Yes. And this is a part of the dreams. One of the reasons why I wanted to have a conversation with you is that we were on the air during COVID. And so we know that tumultuous times economically hit households in major, major ways. And we had always been advocates for preparing for the unknown in advance. But COVID impacted you and your family in a direct way. Please share and tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, yes, actually, it's two years ago, last week, I had suffered a pretty devastating stroke. I left my left side pretty much very weak, pretty much paralyzed, and with the prognosis being very bleak. There was very little expectation of survival, and if there was survival, I would have been a vegetable. But 2 weeks later, God blessed me to walk out of the hospital under the aid of a cane, and as I was recovering from that, 2 months later, I had another stroke. So all the progress I had made, wasted, but I had to start back at zero. And then as I was recovering from that, I had a very bad bout with COVID, double pneumonia. So within 6 months, I'd gone through the gamut. And right. With the COVID, there was literally no expectation of survival. I had doctors had literally had given up on me. They're like, there's no way you'll survive this. But here I am, 2 years later, and as a result, I had to take time off of my doctorate and, to recuperate. And so for the past 2 years, I've been just working on me.
And that's one of the things we would oftentimes talk about, when given the opportunity, what would life look like? And so I always ask the question, if money were not an issue, what would you be doing with your life? And so life happened to you in a major way in the last 2 years, and it gives you the space and the opportunity to think about it. And so that's really the level of conversation, because you've had a couple of stop and starts at this stage, being mature in your life. How was that experience?
Well, actually, even after that COVID, I'd had another stroke, and then I had shingles. So I'd been through a couple of things, and with that stop and start, it does a lot, to your mind. to your thinking. And but as a result, I was able to, I changed my doctoral project to deal with Black men and the impact of trauma and grief with Black men, more specifically Black clergy. And so I've been working on that for like literally the last 6 months. And so it's helped me to be able to answer your question. What I've been looking for moving forward is trying to create a platform and an arena to give Black males a chance or to really to heal. Because we suffer in silence. I mean, I know I do. I did until I decided to really do something about it. And I got a psychologist who was the best gift I ever did for myself. But I'm finding out as I'm doing my project, there are a lot of us, especially clergy, Black male clergy, who suffer in silence. You know, we're like the poet Parlance Dunbar's poem, "We Wear the Mask."
Right.
You know, we smile, but we're hurting. And what the worst thing you can do is try to heal people when you're hurting. But we don't have we don't take advantage of the platforms available to support one another and to really begin to heal. And so, in answer to your question, I'm looking and praying for ways to create a format to get to allow my colleagues to be able to voice their hurts. And you know, what I've learned is no one really asks how you're doing.
Right.
You know, they'll ask the question, "How you doing?" But they don't stick around long enough to answer the question. For you to hear the answer. And what that happened, I had a friend of mine one time that called me, and she said to me, "How are you doing?" And you know, I give the standard answer, and she said, "No, you're not. You've had 3 strokes, COVID. You almost died. How are you doing?"
Right.
For the first time, I actually heard the question differently. And so it's like I've learned to stop and hear the words. You know, words mean a lot more to me now than they had before. You know, and so trying to really be in that arena to hear the words. You know, when I walk into the hospital, I see my doctors who will apologize that they gave up on me.
Right.
And they look at me and they say, "I'm a miracle." I stop to look, what does that word really mean? You know, not be so superficial, but really own that word. If I'm a miracle, what does that look like? And so just trying to create an idea, a platform to be heard.
And I want to stick there with your thesis overall, dealing with Black male clergy. And the challenges that they've endured for the last several years, many of them have walked away. Their finances have become more erratic with churches being shut down. They have taken on jobs that they would have never thought that they've had to take on. It's been unstable financially. They've gone through resources that they thought would always be there. And so there's a picking up the pieces financially. What have you learned between your colleagues and in doing this level of work? How are they enduring?
Everything you described is me, literally. A lot of times, some people are just starting to talk about it. For example, I have a close friend who's a pastor who went through a divorce and all the things you just mentioned. And when I raised that question to him, He looked at me. He really wanted to kiss me and hug me. "No one's ever asked me that question before. I've been holding it in." And so, you know, at some point you learn to live within what you have. I mean, I've gone through, you know, I'm on disability now, you know, and going from working to at some point, you're going through all your trials and tribulations. And it's like a whirlwind, you know, like you're spiraling and you can't even deal with those things that you're missing. Because you're just you want the world to stop spinning. Okay. Well, once it spins, now what? You know, the bills are due. Now you're months behind. But, you know, sometimes you got to just let the dust settle. And then you start to figure it out. And that's where I am. I'm figuring it out. I'm putting pieces back together slowly and trying to see, okay, what's next?
And I want to add one more piece of the puzzle to the conversation. And it is the elephant in the room, ageism. People don't want ageism, that you're more mature, you're older in age, you know, when someone has had a successful career. And just to give them a backdrop, you were a real estate developer.
Appraiser.
A real estate appraiser.
Yes.
You know, and it was a high net worth real estate appraiser
yes.
As well. And so, You know, I don't think people understand. I do, going after 9/11, I remember my income, even at the tender age of 30, going from $100,000 plus down to $18,000. That was something that I was young enough to recover from. But when you're more mature, more seasoned in age, where your skill set may lie versus what the world is willing to pay you at this stage of your life, that too is a challenge, and particularly for individuals that might be clergy as well with a bivocation. How did you manage that? You're saying you're picking up the pieces day in and day out, but how was that for you?
It's been a challenge. I was thinking about this, you know, about it earlier today. When all this was going on, I mean, I had a house, 3 cars, you know, doing fairly well. You know, I was making a nice 6-figure salary. And you go from all of a sudden, you lose the house. You know, you go from 3 cars down to 2, down to 1, down to none. And, you know, and you go from being the so to speak, the man. Now all of a sudden, your kids are looking at you like, what are we going to do? And in addition to that, what happens is the psychological toll it takes on you. You know, you're dealing with, as a Black man in America, all the things that are going on, you know, the Greg Lloyds and, you know, all these things, all the societal stuff that's going on, and you're still dealing with the economic. And let's be honest, you're looked at as a threat. And I used to wear that as a badge of honor to be looked at as a threat, but that don't put, let's put, you know, bread on, food on the table. But I never apologized for who I was, because who I am is who I am. And if you were a threat now, if I was a threat to you now, I can only imagine what I was before. And like I tell people, if I was a threat to you now, wait till I get my doctorate. You ain't seen nothing yet, you know? And so, you know, you begin to, when you go through this thing, you start to really, if you take the time, you start to really discover who you are. You know, you start to really discover, you learn things about yourself you didn't know. You know, and you start to slow down and it's like, wait a minute, let me really take a breath here. Let me look at who I am. And what I had to do was I had to go back to my youth, my childhood, and reach out to friends who've known me all my life and begin to talk to them about me. And so I had to rediscover myself. I went into counseling. I have a wonderful counselor who needed someone to see what I couldn't see at that time. That's part of putting the pieces back together. It's painful, but it's necessary. It makes you stronger in the end. And so that's what I've been working on, that, working on me. And it's been a hard journey, but it's been a wonderful journey.
I want to stay there because I think that you're helping a lot of people today, and particularly clergy pastors and a lot of our friends in that regard. I want to, you know, have you just speak to those Black men that, you know, were totally upended by COVID. The level of influence that they've had and it being stripped away and them not being able to get their bearings financially, but still must yet inspire, influence, and lead. What would you say to them in today's day and age? Post-COVID, where we are in 2022, how do they continue to dream? How do they continue to pick up the pieces and move forward in their life?
The Bible says, be still and know that I am God. And at some point, I tell people, my grandmother used to always say when I was a kid, and I never understood it until I got older, there's going to come a time in your life, you're going to have to find God for yourself. You're going to find out that God is who he says he is and can do what he says he can do. And, you know, you think you know it. You think, you know, you go to seminary, you know, you're preaching, you're pastoring. You think you know it. But until you get struck down and you're going through things, and you still got to, and God will still ask you, with all that you're going through, am I still good and am I still God? And you have to be honest with yourself. And I went through my struggle with God. I had to tell him, I'm having trust issues.
You know, with you, God. I wish we would be honest and say it.
Right. And I had to do that. And when my prayer time, God said to me, now that you stop lying to me, let's put the pieces back together. And, you know, I've discovered a God that I had never knew before. You know, like I tell people, when you're going through strokes and And you define every odd there is. And God's just doing miracles. And people are, it's not that he's doing, I see him. Other people see him. I was walking down the hospital the other day going to a doctor's appointment, and I saw one of my nurses. And she just loud, boisterous Jamaican lady. I love her dearly. And she called me Herbie. She said, she see me walking out. She said, "Is that you?" And I said, "Yes, that's me." And she said, "I thought you died." She said, as bad as it was, she said, "I went home one day, I came back, you were gone the next day." And she said, "I thought you died." She said, I didn't want to ask anybody. She said, "But 2 years later, I see you." And she's like, "You're like a dead man walking." I just see the whole experience through her eyes. This is a woman who took care of me every day. And when I began to see it through her eyes, I'm like, wait, I mean, I'm seeing God in a different way, you know? I'm like, folk gave up on you. But what I've learned is that, and the funny thing, and I was sharing with someone today, you know, when sometimes you're going through things, you're literally alone. You mean, not everybody calls to see how you're doing. I mean, that's just the reality. Not everybody, there's some, you know, and I've shared, we've had this conversation before, you know, like when with your graduation class in seminary, you all keep in touch with each other. And I admire that. I've said that to you. I admire it. And you need people to stand by you. There were times I didn't have it, you know. And you find, you know, and I've talked to other male pastors. What's interesting is some people find out I was sick 2 years later. And the response was, "I didn't know you were sick." Okay. They're like, "Why didn't you call me?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm sorry. I was too busy trying to live. I'm sorry. You know, what was I thinking? I should have taken time out of my suffering, you know." But the issue that I've been finding that men, black males, and I'm going to say that because a lot of my white male counterparts do support groups. We don't trust each other because, you know, we carry a lot of weight. Let's just be as black men, we carry a lot of societal weight. And it's hard to cry on someone's shoulders and not be looked at as being weak. Because I don't care what anyone says. The biggest struggle I've had has not been in corporate America, has been in my own circle and we deal with black male clergy. We don't trust each other. We just don't, because we don't want to show each other our weakness. I have no problem crying for anybody. I'm not ashamed. I've been through the worst. And listen, I'll cry right now if I could, you know, but.
Well, I don't need you to do that.
But the point is, you know, we hold on to hurt, and yet we try to, we're still called to heal people.
Yes.
How do you heal people when you're broken?
Well, actually, that's one of the things that, you know, I think is a great opportunity to close on. One of the questions that I asked you, and I'm so glad that you're able, you know, to go on this journey with me, is if money weren't an issue, what would you be doing with your life? And so I want to answer that question for you. I know a little bit about you, you know, to our audience, as previously stated, there's some information that I have privilege to. So whenever I give guidance or direction and or advice, you know, it's predicated upon the total story. You were just able to hear Reverend Herb's, you know, his life narrative just a little bit. But here's the thing that I want to encourage you, and I'm going to broaden it out to other pastors as well, just predicated upon how it is interactive with your life purpose moving forward. And so if money were not an issue, what you would be doing with your life is helping other black male clergy find their balance or their zen in life, to know that they don't have to be strong enough to handle everything in their own life, that there is a network or a community of people. What I certainly believe that God gives each one of us a talent, at least one. And so the one thing that I've said to you specifically over the years, and I want to encourage other pastors to consider the same, is that there's too much wealth and breadth of knowledge and information and expertise that you have in your life to limit yourself to working for anyone, somebody. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one thing that I've learned in dreaming big dreams is that when we trust God financially in the area of our resources with the anointing and the talents that he has given to us, what he does is he breaks it and he allows it to provide enough for us. And so, you know, just standing in your shoes, you need to do independent consultations. You need to advocate and be that individual that is a consultant, and not just a consultant in the clergy arena where you're getting your doctoral services, but other individuals understand that the depth of what it is that you do from an appraisal perspective. And other pastors, hear me as well. Your life is not centered around exclusively preaching the gospel.
Absolutely.
There comes a period of time where we all got to go back to the book, you know, the good book, and recognize that Paul never hindered or gave up the ability to preach the gospel. But Paul recognized that when he was preaching the gospel, sometimes he had to make a tent.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so that's the area in which provision, financial provision, can be managed. And I speak to individuals all the time. I've watched God move not only in my life. Both of us have been rooted in trauma and some experiences that we've endured, different indeed. But I'm a living witness that God has allowed me to do a part-time assignment vocationally and have a full-time income that does not impede my ability to dream big dreams. And so I want to encourage you to continue to go forward. And I've always told you, and I say this to everyone, when you're dreaming, God does not negate the resources that are necessary for you to dream big dreams. Any final thoughts, Reverend Thomas, as we are closing up our first episode of Dare to Dream with Dr. Nicole?
Well, it's good to be back with you. You know, I've always missed it. But I would also always say, even when you're going through things, you have to reassess. You know, look at your life through other people's lenses who know you. I mean, I've had a young lady, we spoke again yesterday, I've been doing real estate for over 30 years. And 20 years ago, she was a young trainee. And we connected on LinkedIn and seeing how she's doing. She's now a real estate consultant. And we were talking, catching up, and she made a comment to me. She said, you know, everything I've learned in real estate, I remember you taught me. And, you know, it's very humbling. The people, you know, you start to realize that you have a lot to share. You know, you have a lot. And it's 25 years now, she's got her own consulting company, doing very well. And she's like, I may need to call you to help me. And I had a smile, like, you know, being the teacher, when your pupil comes back, that's the biggest compliment to me. And I've even had that even in ministry. I had young preachers I've tutored years ago. All of a sudden, they're coming back saying, I'm this because of what you taught me years ago. So I think with all of it, even as you're daring to dream, you got to see your own value, you know, that you're worth something. I mean, I tell my kids all the time, they think I'm crazy. I'm it. I'm whatever it is, that's me. I'm the big diggity dog. And I enjoy that because, like you said, because no one can limit your dreams but you. You know, who said you can't do it? People who might say it, they don't know you. They don't know what you're capable of. And when I was coming through doing my convalescing, and I still am, I reached out to some of my friends, and they were like, we're not going to congratulate you that you're doing well. You're supposed to do well. That's who you are. And when you start to think about that, that means something. You're supposed to dream big, because God's given us a mind that's bigger than we can even begin to imagine. So, of course, I can do anything I want to if I want to.
That's a good place to end that note on.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Reverend Thomas. Absolutely.
Thank you.
I want to thank you, and I want to thank all of you that are out there. If you would like to dare to dream with Dr. Nicole, please hit us up. We certainly would love to have a conversation with you. I know through experience and doing what it is that I've done for 30 plus years, that one of the challenges that hinders us from dreaming big dreams is the economic piece or the factor. But if you have faith in God and belief in yourself, you get to dare to dream. I'll see you next week. We'll be right back here, and I look forward to spending time with you.
Bye. Thank you. Take care.
Securities and investment advisory services are offered through Next Financial Group Incorporated,
a member of FINRA SIPC.